Everybody, I'd like to call the ADA board meeting for March 26 to order. And Corinne, I would like you to do the roll call of the board members, please.
Mr. Wilkins.
Here.
Deputy Commissioner Paradis.
Here.
Ms. Nygaard.
Here.
Mr. Hughes. Deputy Commissioner Burnett.
Here.
Mr. Dick.
Here.
Mr. Cruz.
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thanks, Corinne. Would you continue with the staff and public and the folks online and in the boardroom, please?
Okay. As I point to you, please identify who you are and what organization you're with. We'll start here at the table.
John Springsteen, ADA.
Ted Leonard, ADA.
Pat Corner.
Dan Sievers, Washington Capital.
Chris Brown, NWH.
Alan Bailey, Petroleum Union.
Mike Chessie, ADA.
Matt Harris, ADA.
Mark Gardner, Western Financial Group.
Jim Hensat, ADA.
Bob Shetchick, Superior Energy Project.
Kirsten Rodrick, ADA.
Chris Anderson, ADA.
Pat Corner here.
Terry Sievers, ADA.
Bill Phelan, ADA.
Carl Kuhn, Duty Capital.
Dean Flowers, Summit Fund.
Jeff Pickle, Wells Fargo.
Steve Plum, Bridge Infrastructure.
Tom Erickson, ADA.
Elwood Bramer, Alaska, Commerce.
Jennifer Haldane, ADA.
Michael Lamb, ADA.
Tim Gallagher, HDR.
Sterling Gallagher, Governor's Office.
John Martinek, Blue Crest Energy.
Benjamin Johnson, Blue Crest Energy.
Mark David, ADA.
Jerry Judy, Department of Law.
Carl Asia, AEA.
Frank Campanet, ADA. Can we have people on the phone identify themselves, please?
Development District. Pete Dickinson, President, All American Oil Fields.
Bud Wagner, All American Oil Fields.
Corey Nelson with Hillcorp.
Chris Gibson with Hillcorp.
Any other public on the phone?
Eric
Pierce. Who is that? We didn't hear you.
Eric Pierce, Fairbanks.
Any other public on the phone? There you go.
Thank you, Chris. Okay, we have an agenda before us. I'll look for a motion for approval. I don't see any changes. Unless anybody has any suggestions, or
move for adoption.
Second. Yeah, petition. All right, well, the agenda is approved before us. Item number five is public comments. Please, if you are going to make a comment, please limit it to 3 minutes. State your name, affiliation, and then any other pertinent information about your testimony. So with that being said, is there anybody online wishing to testify?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Please state your name. And
good morning, everyone. Merrick Pierce out of Fairbanks. I'm representing myself today. Just want to make a few quick comments regarding the energy situation in Fairbanks. And at the top of the list, I just want to remind everybody that air quality in Fairbanks continues to be very significant. There was a recent study that was released by the British Medical Journal that shows that there's a pretty significant relationship between particulate pollution, higher elevations of particulate pollution, and the incidence of stroke. It's worth reading. We have a very serious problem here. It's literally killing people. So when we think about the energy solution for Fairbanks, if we're not fixing the air quality, you don't have a credible plan. And we've done the math and tried to figure out exactly how many wood stoves we need to replace, which are a big source of the particulate pollution. And based on the math, we have to get rid of between 3,000 and 5,000 wood stoves, depending on how you prioritize the efficiency of the stoves. If you get rid of the dirtiest stoves at the top of the list, then you're closer to 3,000 stoves to get the air quality fixed. But that would be going from wood to propane, where propane has virtually no particulate pollution. So just write that down and keep that in mind, that you have to get 3,000 to 5,000 wood stoves replaced. And it's very likely you're going to have to subsidize those conversions. And if you budget about $3,000 per stove, you're going to have to allocate about $15 million to get those folks converted. It also requires that the state have a significant investment in the CapEx for a propane plant, which I hope you're taking a hard look at. I looked at the purchase price of Fairbanks Natural Gas of $52.5 million, and I think Ted Letter was quoted in the last several weeks in the Dispatch article where he said Ada would sell that asset, that Ada doesn't like to keep those assets. Well, my thought is, now to share with you, is that you sell the asset for what you paid for it. And I'm a private equity investor, and I go to RCA. I'm going to look for return on my invested equity. And RCA, if they allow that investment to have an equity return of 10%, you've just massively increased the cost of gas for Fairbanks, because you're going to need $5 million per year for a little over 1,000 customers. So you're going to need roughly $5,000 per customer for an equity return. Now, if RCA says, no, you can't have that kind of equity return, then nobody's going to pay $50 million for the asset, so you're just going to have to dump the asset at a fraction of what you paid for it. I point out that you can access the FNG customers. Right now, you're paying roughly $45,000, $50,000 per customer. You can access those FNG customers a lot less expensively with propane. And, of course, propane, as part of the solution for rural Alaska and the rural parts of Fairbanks that will never be on a gas grid. And the last point that I make is I see that the folks talking about the energy plan for Fairbanks talking about $15 gas at the meter. Folks, that isn't going to work. I'm just bluntly telling you that it's not going to work. You're not going to get a 72% conversion rate. When you have the amortized conversion cost estimated by the Interior Gas Utility about $6 per million BTUs, that puts the burner tip price at about 21. Fuel oil right now is about $19 per million BTU, so $15 at the meter isn't going to work. You've got to work harder at getting the cost down so that you can get the conversion and you get the gas utility to pay for itself. So one last point is, if I look at the Ada webpage and I try to get an update on what's going on with the energy plan, I see that your project overview still talks about LNG trucking off the North Slope. I thought that boondoggle died it out about 3 months ago. And I think my point really is, you've got to do a better job of doing public outreach and showing the public what you're looking at and what your criteria are to fix the energy problem we have in the interior. So with that, I'll let anybody else want to testify to do so. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for your comments. Is there anybody else online wish to make a comment?
Yes, good morning. My name is Rick Kresge. I work for the Keenan Twin City Economic Development District, and I'm calling in to support the Blue Crest application for the Ada loan. I think that increases the gas and oil supply for both NSTAR and Tesoro here on the peninsula. More importantly, while the state of Alaska is experiencing financial difficulties, it creates a lot of jobs on the peninsula, which are going to be important, which has been slowing down with the low price of oil and gas lately, last 2 months or so. And more importantly, I want to go back and just reiterate that it creates the jobs. There are the cook inlet incentives, so it looks like if Blue Crest can pencil it out, Kenai Peninsula Economic Development District is totally behind the project and the application for the loan. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anybody else online wishing to testify?
Peter Dickinson with All American Oilfield.
Go ahead, Peter.
I'm calling in support of the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority's consideration to invest in the Blue Crest Energy Cosmopolitan Oil and Gas Development Project. I believe that the Cosmopolitan Project has potential to bring more oil and gas supply for South Central Alaska, which in turn bring more jobs to South Central Alaska and is ultimately our goal. Our team has managed the Cosmopolitan number one well, and many of our employees were associated with the previous wells that were drilled in the field, Hanson 1, Hanson 1A, and Hanson 1AL. These findings were significant enough to potentially produce up to 10,000 barrels of oil a day, not including the gas. And with these findings, I believe this would bring in new explorers and increased investment in the Cook Inlet Basin. The development of the Cosmopolitan lease would bring a substantial economic increase to our area. So in short, thanks for the opportunity to comment, and I hope you would consider the investment in Blue Crest Energy's Cosmopolitan development. We look forward to a bright future in the South Central Alaska and the Kenai Peninsula.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else online wishing to make public comment? Anybody else online? Right here, no one online. Anybody? I'm sorry? Hello? All right, anybody in the boardroom wishing to make a public comment?
Stand up. I'm Benjamin Johnson. I'm the CEO of Bluecrest Energy. This is John Martinek. He's our chief operating officer. Bluecrest, as you heard, is in the process of developing the Cosmopolitan project at Anchor Point. Cosmopolitan is the largest proven and defined yet undeveloped oil field in the entire Cook Inlet Basin. And what our engineers and geologists have spent years looking at this and have concluded that it's going to take about 5 to 7 years of continuous drilling of these long-reach oil wells from the shoreline out 3 miles under the inlet to reach the oil reservoirs. And that's going to take a very big rig to do that. So we have applied with ADA for a loan to help in the acquisition of this large drilling rig. We understand that it's not on the agenda for review or approval today, but we did just want to show up, introduce ourselves, and offer anything we can to support your evaluation of this project.
Thank you very much. Thank you for coming today. Is there anybody else in the room? All right. I'm going to close the public comments. And is anybody else? And I've got a request from Sterling Gallagher with the governor's office to make some comments, make a presentation. So, Sterling, would you mind coming up front, please? Welcome, Sterling.
Thank you. I'm Sterling Gallagher. I've been around this corporation for 40 plus years, so I know with which I talk. Back in the early days of this organization, we were also developing the permanent fund. And as we looked at the cash flows for the permanent fund and things like that, we made a decision that there was enough money to do both. We were thinking about a development bank approach at the permanent fund, or a more narrow approach defined and keep the permanent fund invested in a very investment-oriented track. And what turned me off was looking at Alberta. Alberta did use their permanent fund to do development banking, and as you can understand, it's gone off in many different directions. This corporation, while it was the early thoughts were to do development banking, it's kind of lost its way, or that vision has never been fully implemented. I would recommend that this board and the executive director and some of the important staff tour development banks like the Inter-American Development Bank, the World Bank, and just look at what their loan processes will do. Things that have hit my desk here in the last few weeks at the governor's office suggest that we need to do more of that work. In the early days, we actually did some development banking work and looked at the fishing industry. One of the ideas that flowed come up out of that was the Seafood Marketing Board, where when we examined that industry, we found out that the balance sheets of the companies couldn't possibly they didn't have enough money to do a marketing program. And at that point in time, I think we spent like $500,000 with the initial program and cleared over $200 million of inventory off these companies' books just by that sort of, and it was that sort of analysis of various industries that we need today. When I came back, we looked at the oil industry, and Bluecrest is a perfect example. We need to think seriously. We have on the one hand, a credits program that's developing all sorts of fields, but here in the Cook Inlet, but we don't have any way, once these firms get it, to fully develop all these fields. So if we had institutionalized that sort of an approach at this agency and started to understand the various industries we have in this state, and could, we might have anticipated this problem that we're having. And so I recommend to you that this board start to understand what it takes to do development banking work. It's a lot more economic driven than your current structure. And it gets lost sometimes with personalities of executive directors and things like that. I think, and that's no criticism of the past, there's a lot of things come and gone in that time period. But I think it's the rigor of economic analysis of our industry will help move us forward. I don't think you have the balance sheet to do the development banking as of today. We've given too many dividends back to the government and not kept up with the purpose of this corporation. So I think this corporation is too important to the future of this state to lose all our money into dividends. We need to build this corporation to accomplish its goals.
Thanks, Brilliant. That concept, I'll look for questions or comments from the board members. Fred? John or Ted? Any comments on that?
I think I definitely appreciate your comments and look forward to seeing how we move to progress the organization into being more of a review of what a traditional development bank is and what it means, and working with the governor's office to allow us some other tools to be able to be more effective.
It's that vision of the economic rigor that analysis that it goes through is that will bring this out. It was the examination of the fishing industry that we found out we could solve the problem with, $1 million. And there was, $200 million of inventory. Development banks finance the weak links in the economy. And if you can figure out what the weak links, it's usually not that much money to make the rest of it go.
So my comment is, if any information that the board can get as far as the narrative, development banks, what they do, background information, where they are, where we can set up some sort of a planning session about it to understand it, maybe bring some folks in
I actually think it's worthwhile to go see their processes.
Yes, yeah, but we want to understand it first, and then okay. we move to the second phase. Is that? Board members, does that sound like something to educate ourselves on? So, John. And
yes, sir.
All right. Thank you, Sterling.
Yeah.
Next on the agenda is the prior board meeting minutes for February 25th. I'll entertain a motion.
I'll move the minutes.
Sure. Sorry. Are there any comments on the minutes? Any changes? Corrections?
Yes, sir.
No?
Question.
All right, question. Anybody opposed to adopting the minutes? No? All right, Corinne, they've been adopted.
Thank you.
Okay. Item 7, new business. A is a resolution G15-07, appointing executive director. Ted?
Yes, Chair. G1507 is to appoint a new executive director. I have submitted my retirement as of April 30th. The board has gone through a process to select the new executive director, and we started that transition process on March 16th. And this resolution will officially adopt the transition and pass the powers on to the new executive director that you selected.
Okay.
And on a personal note, I'd like to thank again the board for all the support during my time period too.
Thank you, Ted. So I'm going to ask Russell for the moving of the resolution now, and then we'll have a discussion.
Yes, Chairman, I'll move resolution number G15-07.
Is there a second? Second. So discussion. So I wanted to give Ted the opportunity to say a few things with it. So Ted, from our perspective, we appreciate your service, and we look forward to John filling the void, big shoes to fill, and we appreciate you taking the mantle on with the Pentex investigation on possible purchase. I think it goes without saying that you've added a lot of value to Ada over the past half a dozen years. So for that, I appreciate that. I'll look for any more board comments.
Gary? Yeah, let me just ask that I be associated with your remarks in the record. Thank you, Ted.
I was thinking, Mr. Chairman, that we should have a spreadsheet on the value he's added.
Yeah.
Ted, I just wanted to thank you. I have learned how to be very patient with policy and how government moves, and you've been a great mentor there. You've brought a great amount of value to opening these opportunities for us, so we hope to see you in other capacities soon.
The one thing I'd like to add, Chair, is I think, you know, as the board selected Mr. Springsteen, that I've seen the wisdom that the board have. I'm very excited. I think we've laid a strong platform to move forward with things that Mr. Sterling has talked about, and the private sector experience that John's bringing and the investment banking experience that he has is going to take this organization to the next level with the board we have. So I really appreciate, again, who you picked, and I'm very excited in seeing where Kata will move on based on the platform.
No, I echo your remarks, Mr. Chairman, and also just to, you know, Ted and I have had a number of conversations around development banking and along the lines that Mr. Gallagher has laid out. And so I appreciate the foundation you've set, Ted. It hasn't been easy, and I know there have been challenges, but I think it is a good, strong foundation, and I think, you know, Mr. Springsteen will help kind of take us to the next level. Thank you for everything you've done.
And Ted, I'd just like to say in closing, you brought an excellent management team to Ada, I think Mr. Springsteen will be able to take the next level, but we're not for that group. I mean, Ada wouldn't be where it is for today. So for that we do appreciate that. Okay, so for us, we have Resolution G15-7, appointing the Executive Director, John Springsteen. Quinn?
Mr. Wilkins?
Aye.
Ms. Nygaard?
Aye.
Deputy Commissioner Paradise?
Aye.
Deputy Commissioner Burnett?
Yeah.
Mr. Day?
Yes.
Mr. Bruce?
Yes.
Motion carried.
Thank you. Congratulations, John, and thank you, Ted.
Okay.
You're on your own, though.
Yeah. Next up is a loan resolution, L15-03, Summit Loan Fund. Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move Resolution 15-3.
I'll second.
Thank you. John?
Item 7B, Loan Resolution L15-03, regards purchase by the authority of a participation in a loan to Summit Fund, LLC. At this time, I ask that Chris Anderson present Item 7B.
Good morning.
Good morning, Chris. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
Good. This is a request from Wells Fargo, Summit Fund, LLC, and the total loan amount, the gross loan amount, is $2,550,000. Ada would be participating $2,295,000, again, on a long-term basis, 25 years. Several guarantors, Pudu Capital, I like that name, LLC, Carl Kuen, and JC Company, Dean and Lori Clowers are all guarantors of this debt. The use of the proceeds is long-term financing for a newly constructed building in Wasilla. It's retail, and it is fully leased, single-tenanted to Petco, 11,400-square-foot building. In regards to jobs, there would be 12 permanent jobs created, 50 new construction jobs, temporary jobs created with this project. And it will be managed by Carl Kuhn. I hope I'm pronouncing your name right. Am I? Good, good, good. Dean Clowers and Lori Clowers. They are experienced owners, investors, managers of commercial property in Southeast Alaska. We would be taking a first deed of trust position. Property has been appraised at $3,000,004, which gives us 75% loan to value. And we would require an assignment of rents, assignment of the lease, which is fairly standard and subordinate to the deed of trust. There is related debt on this credit, which is why it's coming to the board, because the total related credit is in excess of $5 million. In rounded figures, the cumulative outstanding balance is $5.8 million, and with the addition of this particular request, assuming that it's approved, it would be $8.1 million. All loans that we have in our books are current, and they pay as agreed. All of the loans that we have as related debt are retail warehouse properties also in Wasilla. Financial information has been provided to you under separate cover. There are no known environmental issues on this property. So we listed out the strengths and weaknesses of the transaction. And the strengths we saw as the debt service coverage being 1.39, which is definitely above our guideline of 1.25 to 1. The owners are experienced in commercial real estate investments. There's a high certainty of matching lease revenues with the debt service because the lease is for 10 years and they have 4 or 5 year options. So assuming they exercise their options, that's a total of 30 years. And there's a potential outside financial support from the guarantors because they have a strong net worth and a cash flow position. The weaknesses, we always try and look at weaknesses. It's kind of a plus and a minus in regards to the fact that it's a single tenanted, but we listed it as a weakness. However, we felt it was mitigated because Petco is a credit quality as a national tenant, and it has outside resources beyond that. Also, should they go into default, which would happen with potentially any project, the property would be subject to a marketing time, but the location of this property is good. If you're familiar with Wasilla, it's very close to the Fred Meyer out there. And in regards to portfolio diversification, currently, statewide, we're at 20.6 in retail, 20.6%. We would be increasing that to 21.1. And in regards to just the Matsu region, we're at 18%, and that would increase to 22.3%. So in regards to Ada's capacity for funding, as you can see, fiscal year 15, total of $60.8 million. You take out what's funded and what's approved to be funded, and also take out this request as well. You can see that there is still sufficient allocation of funds. So staff is recommending this loan participation, and I would open it up for questions. I'll tell you, Mr. Hugh and Mr. Powers are here, as well as Mr. Piccolo with Wells Fargo.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate that. Are there questions from the board?
Mr. Chairman.
Greg, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, and I'd like to begin my questioning by noting that I'm still new to the board and I want to be able to play the new card for the balance of 2015. So my first question is just concerns a single word on page one of the memorandum. It says long-term financing for a newly constructed retail building. And what I want to probe is, constructed is past tense, so this project is complete.
It is.
So why would we pursue supporting it with financing when it's already been brought to market? What I'm questioning there is Ada's role and our purpose in supporting economic development. This has been accomplished, so it seems to me a question worth asking, and I look forward to the answer.
Well, the participation loan program is a term loan program. We don't do commercial. We don't do the construction aspect
of
it.
So it's always after the fact.
It's always after the fact.
Okay, thank you. Second question, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
If I might. I was interested in Wells Fargo's participation being for 10 years while ours is for 25, because it would seem to me that the risk inherent in the loan is in the out years. We've all witnessed vacant box stores, et cetera. We've got a single tenant here. So mm-hmm. it would seem that we're taking a disproportionate share of the lease by taking the longer term.
Well, a couple of reasons. First of all, the fact that we can offer 25-year fixed money is kind of our niche in the market. And it levels out and gives the borrower an understanding of their debt service over time. Commercial lenders, you're not going to find commercial lenders giving fixed rate financing for that length of time. They do not take that degree of market risk. Now, on the other side of the equation, when we look at our portfolio and how long loans are on our books on average, it's usually 7 or 8 years. And so, you know, this is amortized over 25 years. Most of them do not stay on our books for that length of time. They usually turn.
And third and final question, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead,
Fred. Just with the context of the fiscal situation in Alaska, the potential that we're entering a recession is substantial. So I wondered how you evaluated that risk in the context of the repayment ability of the tenant. Again, I'm speaking towards the vacancy of big box stores, which is a phenomenon we've all observed.
Right. Well, we felt, again, that, you know, Petco has some financial strength behind them beyond, you know, just a, I guess you would say a mom-and-pop retailer. There's that aspect of it. Also, when you analyze real estate transactions, you always try to pay attention to the location and the exposure of the real estate. And so you're always looking at a downside risk analysis of what happens if. And so the location of a property is very important in that regard. We felt that it was well located, close to Fred Meyer, close to Home Depot. Actually, I have a map. But
I'm aware of what
you're saying. Yeah. Okay. So, you know, if we do have a downturn in the market, there's going to be issues beyond just a singular, you know, property. But we try to analyze it from a location perspective.
Mr. Chairman, that probably brings me to, and thank you very much for those lucid answers. That probably brings me to my last concern, which is just as our responsibility facing the changing market circumstances of the state, it seems like we should be picking up the intensity of our awareness of what's coming. I don't have any answer to that. I just, I'm certainly feeling pressure from day-to-day activities. And Jillian, our department's budget was cut $11 million yesterday at Senate subcommittee, and those continuing actions and ongoing conditions in the market are going to ripple. So I just think we have to be wary.
Well, I appreciate your concerns, and I think the last board meeting we asked for, you know, whatever economic indicators are out there to keep us appraised.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. I will say that, you know, Chris, if you have the note off the top of your head, our delinquency rate is point what?
0.44%. And that is just one loan. That's one loan.
Yeah.
Out of 250 plus, and so we have not seen anything in the portfolio. I mean, I appreciate your comments, but we haven't seen it register in the portfolio as an issue as of yet.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Jerry, I know you're on the line. I just want to make sure you have any questions.
I'm here.
Okay. Any questions?
No, I don't have any questions on this.
Thank you. Okay, so Fran, would you I'm gonna call for the vote?
Mr. Wilkins.
Aye.
Deputy Commissioner Paradis.
Aye.
Ms. Nygaard.
Yes.
Deputy Commissioner Burnett.
Yes.
Mr. Day.
Yes.
Mr. Bruce.
Yes.
Motion carried.
Thank you. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
Item number C is Resolution G15-06, approval of a demolition of the Blues Central Building.
Yes. Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'll move resolution number G15-06.
I'll second.
Thank you, Crystal. Discussion, John.
Item 7C, resolution 21506, for the demolition of the central building. This time I'd ask Carl Wright to present item 7C.
Good morning, Carl.
Morning. Well, we requested a proposal from RIM Architects, who's been involved in, well, in Ada's building search, and for a number of years. We asked them to provide a proposal for the demolition, and they came back with a proposal of about $60,000. The majority of that is to replace what's there right now with new pavement, lighting, security, etc. And about $17,000 out of their total fee is the actual demolition. So it's pretty straightforward.
You feel it's a value, or the pricing is value, Carl, as far as what they're proposing? Okay. Questions from the board? Gary?
Just a clarification. So that the resolution conforms with the narrative. Carl, will you look on the fourth, whereas the last sentence, starting with after completion. It's my understanding that this is $65,000 to cost estimates and bid documents for demolition of the building. And then it says the separate request will come to the board for demolition and construction funding.
Right.
But the resolution just speaks in that sentence in the resolution. It says staff will submit a separate funding request for the construction phase. Should that not say demolition and construction?
Yes.
Okay, so friendly amendment is...
Sure.
We amended that to say, have the notion that separate requests, funding requests for demolition and construction.
Okay. Corinne, did you get that? Someone,
or however they want to word it, so that it's appropriate.
Sherry?
Mr. Wilkins, can you tell me which is the fourth whereas clause?
It's the last sentence in the fourth whereas.
Okay. I'll take care of that.
Thank you.
Any objections for this? With that, certainly, a clarification? Okay. Carl, any other requests or questions of Carl? Just FYI, it's the little piece next door to get tear it down and clean it up. Basically, that's all we're doing.
I do have a question. So, you know, we've been kicking the football around for 3 years about rebuilding and parking and all that. What piece does that play, this resolution play into that bigger plan?
The remodel and addition plan called for an addition to the building, mm-hmm. you know, on the west side. Mm-hmm. So we're tearing down Blue Central, opening up that lot for future construction.
So the effort to renovate this building and expand is still ongoing?
It's on hold right now.
Okay.
Thank you, Carl. Any further questions from the board or Carl? Corinne, I'll entertain the roll call, please.
Mr. Wilkins.
Aye.
Mr. Commissioner Paradise.
Aye.
Ms. Nygaard.
Yes.
Deputy Commissioner Burnett.
Yes.
Mr. Day.
Yes.
Mr. Prue.
Yes.
Motion carried.
Thank you. Thank you, Carl. Item D is Interior Energy Project Update. John?
Item 7D, ask that Bob Shepchick present item 7D and have Bob call the members of the team as needed.
Okay. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
Welcome back.
Thank you. And we might as well have Mark and Ted come up. It's there, the left okay. half of your screen, as... they'll be handling the report on the due diligence. The left hand screen that says the Ada board meeting. Who's driving for me in terms of changing slides? Oh, I wonderful.
Technical.
There you go.
Welcome back, Jed.
You know, Ted's trip to Hawaii originally was a retirement trip.
Yes.
And I would like to thank him publicly for making it a vacation so that he could continue on with the due diligence. Maintaining continuity on that was really important. The presentation we have before you is one prepared for House Resources that wasn't presented yesterday. It will be presented at 3:30 to Senate Energy. And so my goal was that you have the most current information that we're presenting to the legislature as questions get asked all around a small state. Some of these things reiterate things you know, and so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on them, but in terms of working with the legislature, we start a little further back each time in order to make sure that if there are base assumptions being made in the things we're doing, that we talk about them. So that starts with the goals. These are not a surprise to any of you, but really for us as we work forward, it's always important to start with those. Occasionally we hear questions, particularly, you know, why are we doing this? You know, why are there pricing targets and why are they important? And why don't you build out and pick your choice? Build out like Kenai or build out like Matsu or build out like Anchorage. And so the base of the goals of the project are very important to work, particularly with the legislature over. And unless you have questions, I won't spend a lot of time. You can go back and ask questions on any of this. The IEP, the current status.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to note, it's obvious to all of us, but the comment we received during public comment concerning air quality in Fairbanks is the third bullet point there. So we are connecting that dot.
And it is both in terms of the impact on wood, as it gets to Mr. Pierce's comments on pricing, to the extent that the target is $15 per MCF at the meter. That's the equivalent BTU cost of a purchased cord wood. And so as we look at conversions affecting not just energy savings, it also matches that convenience savings level of people who are burning wood. You're not going to get the lifestyle people who want to burn and want to do it that way, but in terms of would you rather turn your thermostat or is the cost the same to buy a cord of wood, that pricing target hits that point. Current status, as you're well aware, pursuing that North Slope concession agreement. Ada AEA and the team you put together are evaluating infrastructure for the Cook Inlet, and current financing is ongoing with the build out in Fairbanks and North Slope. Concession agreement outcome, you know, we had some questions in Juneau. You know, why did Ada walk away from this deal? You know, there was a belief, incorrect, but there was a belief that there was a hard $13 price available to Fairbanks out of the concession agreement, and somehow that should have been morphed and changed in the discussions of how it came about, the offer to extend without maintaining the exclusive relationship, and all that has been missed in Juneau to some extent. And so this slide is what we talked to the House and the Senate is about. It was a commercial transaction that didn't pass the due diligence tests all the way through the end, and that's the process. And to go along with that, this is Ada's standard due diligence process that you're familiar with. And so we talk through, you know, you go through the feasibility, you go to phase two and you analyze it, and then you get to your due diligence. And if it doesn't make that due diligence step, it doesn't move on as a project, to give a level of comfort that this board plays a role, and it plays a significant role in the choice of projects. There have been a lot of questions about Cook Inlet. Is Cook Inlet viable? Why are you looking at Cook Inlet, and what has changed since 2013 as the driveless for the North Slope? And this slide really gets to that in terms of the looking at the impact of credit, the new people into the market, the sense of additional reserves that are available, and the 3 years ago worries about brownouts in Anchorage compared to the sense of what gas is available now. at the 3,000 foot level. I think we talked about this last month. You know, that there are differences between the North Slope and Cook Inlet. The supply is, you know, supplies are uncertain, but we're getting indications that pricing and gas will be available. North Slope, we know the contract and we know the terms. Conversely, it's cheaper to build and it's cheaper to transport from the south and the north, and it's a balance of those two. And the conclusion is, if affordable gas is available, then cooking with LNG really is favorable. If it's not, then we look back to the North Slope, and we expect to look at both as we go forward. There's also been some, there isn't a plan, we don't know what we're looking at if we go to South Central, that there's no definition, and this is very comparable to the slide that you'll have seen in the 2014 time frame, except it's from South Central instead of the North Slope. And really, the approach has not changed in terms of looking for a private developer. Looking for a gas supply has changed because there was a known contract on the North Slope. You're looking for a private developer, private trucking, and contractors to bring the trucking. The railroad is now an option, and we're spending time on that in terms of the transport portion. And then the storage, regas, and distribution don't change a lot whether the gas is coming from the north or the south. And then the box in the bottom really gets to the goal is changing the direction and optionality for that direction, not any change in the program. And ADA will also consider other alternatives, whether it's a flex deal option or if someone turns in a proposal for a propane option, that'll be evaluated as we go out and look for that private partner. To the ground up question, is there gas available? The administrative order from the governor asked DNR to characterize the reserves and the gas availability, and then they have worked with Nick Shimoniak, who you're all aware of, on preparation of this slide. And so the left hand of it tells you, the left hand gives you the known reserves in Cook Inlet and the change since 2009. And that really is a result of a lot of the tax credit work that's happened and the aggressive work of people like people that are in this room. You also have the last 10 years of exports at just under 400 BCF, and the projected 10 years of demand in the interior, which is, you know, 8. And so in terms of scale, the question is, can the South Central risk having the interior drank out of the same straw as the rest of South Central? And the left hand tells you the reserves are there, not unknown reserves, but the ones that they know they can get at. And the right hand side gives you a sense of scale, both of 1 year's Cook Inlet demand. There's a House bill, I believe it's 100, that is looking at a tax credits for restart of Agrium. And Agrium, if it were to come online, whether it's one train or two trains, is multiples of the annual demand of the interior. And so as a sense of scale, you're looking at, you know, 6% of the total Cook Inlet demand right now is the market share that would be given up. And for Agrium, it's a fifth if they were to go back into business. And to some extent, the argument that you should have tax credits to open Agrium and we can't risk allowing gas to the interior are mutually exclusive. But those are going on right. Those discussions are going on right now. Then there's been a lot of questions. What does House Bill 105 do? So if you guys are getting questions on what is House Bill 105 doing and what is it, how is this creating issues? House Bill 105, the section that has to do with the IEP, essentially offers flexibility within state to source the gas. And so to go with that, we put in what House Bill 105 doesn't do, because these are some of the things that people said, well, you're doing this or it might be doing that. And so we're having to do some education work on our part. It doesn't increase any funding. It doesn't increase investment authority It doesn't alter any ADA policies for supporting the private sector and how partnerships go in, and it doesn't change the intent or the goals of the IEP. And to the extent that we can manage to focus the actual impact of what's being done versus the questions, and it's our job to answer those questions, the more likely we'll have success with House Bill 105 and Senate Bill 50. There have been questions on the board resolution passed in January, and it has to do with, well, the board passed a resolution to go study this, and when you're done with your study, then bring it back to the legislature. And so Ted will be present when presentations are made that address this, as he was the author of the resolution, and we are proceeding that, you know, that resolution directs us to continue a commercial process similar to happened before and end up with another partner that we can proceed the IEP. It's not an evaluation of all the options and then a 100-page study. We are working a process to bring the project back toward having a partner that brings LNG to Fairbanks, and the end result will be a partner, not a study. And to get with that, then we're to the, how are we doing it? And we are working the components of the supply chain, and I'll walk you through generally where we are relative to where we were a month ago when I was here on these. And that, you know, our team continues to work each of these components as we move forward. Deputy Commissioner Paraday is leading the first effort, and we appreciate their effort and support. DNR is fully engaged at this point in terms of acquisition of a gas supply. As you remember, the North Slope had two private parties that already had gas supply contracts. That DCCED is taking the lead to secure gas supply contract, and that is, if you remember the earlier slide, one of the critical pieces of being able to put the supply chain together. As we know, costs for construction are lower and transportation costs are lower in the South Central.
Rob, so is this solicitation of Coquitlam Gas vendors in Crossville, is it on behalf of the Interior Utility?
Yes.
Okay.
And whether it's the individual utilities or, as you recall, the discussion of a utility consortium for handling the trucking in the North Slope project, consortium of the utilities that actually are the ones that enter into the contract, is there's two choices for approach, and that one hasn't been worked out yet in terms of will it be each of the individual utilities or a consortium entity that is handling the gas and the, you know,
so they ultimately would be the contract with the supplier.
Yes.
Okay. Not the state or ADA.
Well, I say yes, but remember we have an RFP process that will allow them to propose in different manners. So you could have a proposer say, I'm going to propose a gas supply and liquefaction project together and sell you gas FOB out of the plant. And so it's not a done deal that it'll be a separate gas supply and a separate liquefaction. We're offering the opportunity for vendors to bundle that.
Okay.
And that solicitation is, I would say, at the 50th percentile range of complete. It's going through DNR now in terms of making sure it has both the specificity and the level of detail in terms of where you want the gas delivered, the range of time, that will get us reasonable, responsive answers. And that's probably got about a month's worth of work through DNR back and forth to get that one ready to go out the door.
All right.
The LNG capacity, that one we intend to issue a two-stage RFI that takes any idea and anyone that wants to say, I can solve the problems of energy for the interior. It will focus on LNG from South Central, and we will evaluate, window down to 2 to 4, that we will spend more time. From there, we'll go to 1 that turns into a partner similar to the partner we looked at for the North Slope project. And that's further ahead than the RFI for gas. We want to issue them concurrently because of that issue that we are offering multiple options in the RFP for liquefaction that you can also offer gas supply, so we want them out at the same time. So there's not, oh, what are you doing here? I thought you were going to issue that. We want them both out at the same time. And so our timeline is probably 30 days plus or minus to have them both rolled out together.
And it's your thoughts that also we would also look at North Slope Gas at the same time?
Yes.
Okay.
That all along the thinking has been, because of the interplay between the two, that we want to do them concurrently, not staggered, in order to be able to evaluate gas supply at the same time we're evaluating the liquefaction options.
Okay.
Transportation and storage. Really, a lot more is known about South Central Transportation than North Slope, because FNG has been doing it for 16 years. And so really you have known costs and you have known entities doing that transport. And so it's more a modeling of the trailer configuration and storage. So this one is more further advanced than any of the others because of the known commercial partnerships. And the expectation is the thing with the North Slope project that you'd have a private contractor doing the transportation. Likely you would have the utilities either in group or individually own the trailers, because you want to be able to have optionality of who's pulling the trailers, and that's the best way to accomplish that, rather than expecting a private vendor to go out and purchase trailers that are single purpose and then you're tied to that vendor. With the railroad is working with both Kurt Warren and Nick Shimoniak on, we provided them demand profiles across time so that they can work the growth of the project and the growth of the demand into their thinking about how does that fit into a rail model where your efficiencies are the more train more cars that the train is pulling, the lower your costs. And so how does it fit in when you have a demand of 4 or 5 in year one and it ramps up to 40 in year six? And so that is those are iterations going back and forth, and some of it depends on the location of the LNG plant as to the viability of rail, but we are pursuing that.
So Bob, right now the supply is about up to 20% that's currently being provided to the interior?
Correct.
So that 80%, how fast, remind me again how much volume that is, and how fast can you get to the 100% build-out? Because if you're going to propose, you want to kind of, and I think the board should know.
We have the demand curve from the Cardinal study that was done by AEA that set about a 6-year growth to 73% of the total conversion. One of the pieces of work we're doing is sliding that to 7 or 8 years, and it's not because of the change in pricing, but that there's pipe in the ground now in Fairbanks, and there'll be a North Pole after this summer, and you can only do a finite number of conversions in one summer. And instead of 2,000 a year because the gas supply has been delayed, we would be looking at 4,000 or 5,000 in the first year. And so we're going to have to slip some of the demand into the out years based on the logistics of furnaces and service lines and technicians capable of doing that. But we have that profile for an 8-year build out, and it's that 8 to 9B total across the period of time. That first 5 really should come in the first 5 years.
So that first 5B would be in the first 5
yes.
years. And of that component, so of that first 5, what percentage of it is electric utility versus resident?
40% is electric, and 60% is residential. And
so that electric utility, that could actually turn pretty quick then as far as the demand.
Yes. Golden Valley is looking at a 3-year bridging project with propane. Right now, use of oil is less expensive than propane, and so they're still looking at the economics of that, but they expect that to change. But they're looking at running their turbines for 3 years on propane while we bring gas to town. And so if we're more successful than 3 years, which would certainly be our hope, we'll have a delay of 1 year before the electric demand kicks in. But it doesn't kill the project. It just delays that electric demand for the first year.
Okay.
And one other piece of your question that I didn't answer was how close are we to build out to accomplishing that 5B? And really, after this summer, we're probably within 30 miles of pipe of having enough pipe in front of enough people to accomplish that first 5B.
Okay.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, could you restate that? I just want to make sure I heard it.
That after this summer, the core of Fairbanks, absent 30 miles, will be built out within 100 feet of most residences. And the core of North Pole will be built out within 100 feet of most residences. Fairbanks and North Pole combined will take up that first 5B at it between Fairbanks and North Pole and Golden Valley.
And right now there's only 1B, so it's an additional 4B.
Correct. That was to your question, 80%.
And that 5B is counting, how much of that is GBA?
Two. That's the 40%.
That kind of puts it in perspective.
Mm-hmm.
What? So it's one today.
One today.
Two GBA makes three. Yeah. And then where did the other two come from? Where's the other
Core two? Town Residential and North Pole Residential combined.
Thank you.
Distribution and conversions. So the build out is ongoing for the summer of 15. Fairbanks Natural Gas is planning to put in 30 more miles of pipe. They have ads in the newspaper for summer crews, and they have pipe in their yard, you know, waiting for spring. IGU opened bids across the last 3 weeks. The bids came in the range that you saw in your loan packet, so they're awarding bids to contractors, and their pipe is sitting in the yard out in North Pole. And so really, in terms of what you've seen for commitments from both utilities, we're seeing happen this summer. The due diligence, you're going to get a report from Ted and Mark on that next, so really I won't cover that anymore. And then really, we're moving forward with optimizing the piping system, and Kirk is working with NSTAR. The economics of the combined utility, Nick and I are both working with the contractor that have done the models that you've seen for IGU to combine the two. And we're working on potential structured utilities, and I've met with all three utilities more than once. So that's moving along. Planning targets and what to expect. Gas supply agreement. There won't be a firm gas supply agreement, but the goal is to have a term sheet level with a secure supplier. You won't have a selected partner, but we should be through the first step of the two-step partner solicitation. Depending, Pentex acquisition will be complete one way or another by June 30. And the timeline and components, we should be back on, once you have your partners identified, be able to put the complete when does gas flow timeline together for you stacked at that point. So that's the target for June 30. In summary, you know, we've had two pieces of good news in the last few days. The House Speaker removed one of the committee assignments for House Bill 105. That's a good indication that people are talking. Concurrently, the governor announced that interior energy legislation is one of his top two items for the end of the session. And so the work that's being done by Gene Terrio and Deputy Commissioner Paraday really is yeoman's work on this. This has not been an easy bill to carry and easy work to do, and you know it's fully benefiting both the board and this project.
Bob, does it appear that HB 105 is going to be the vehicle for passage?
Well, you probably have a better sense of how the House and Senate work together. The discussion has been, at least at a high level, that it'll be the House version that is finally the one that the Senate one could come over to the House, and the House will have the final action, but that's all to be bargained, yes.
So the presentation today is SB 50?
Is SB 50 before Senator Machicki's committee. We haven't talked about flex deal much, and I can if you want, but we've done some work both for the governor and Senator Machicki looking at that flex deal option. And we expect to see an amendment or a committee substitute that specifically allows a pipeline as something as eight that eight is allowed to consider, which currently by statute you're not allowed to look at pipeline options under the SEPS funding.
Thank you.
Bob, is there
I got a question about this gas supply agreement. Can you just reiterate what that timeline looks like and what can the market expect to see and from who is going to offer that?
What they can expect to see is either request for information or an expression of interest solicitation to all the suppliers of gas, similar to anybody that wants to purchase gas, to go into confidential negotiations over their willingness to sell, their pricing, and their terms, and to concurrently negotiate, and that is being led out of DCCED.
Okay. And the timeline on that?
The timeline on that is the expression of interests or solicitation likely will go out in 30 days plus or minus. And from that, you've 30 to 60 days of back and forth and negotiations to get to a term sheet level. And that gets you to the end of June.
Are the utilities going to be in this negotiation?
The utilities will not be in this negotiation. Utilities will be kept up to speed, for example, when we get a near final draft similar to what we have with the RFP. We will work with the utilities so they know what we are doing on their behalf and they are in agreement that what we're doing.
Okay, so they're going to agree.
Yeah, I mean,
you're not going to get to the end and say, oh, by the way, one is kind of saying we don't like that feeling.
Well, we can't promise that. But we can take steps.
We've been down that path.
We can take steps to make it more likely that won't happen. And for example, I met Monday with all three utilities over the draft of the RFP on liquefaction, and taking their comments and using that as part of the edits, so that we're sure that the solicitation we go out for liquefaction matches their expectations of what we're doing on their behalf. Because ultimately, if this doesn't drive into the utilities in the interior, we're not accomplishing our goal, and they need to play a larger role in that than the last one.
Okay.
And there again, that's going to go in as an RFP from the same department, or how does that look to the marketplace?
In the marketplace, that will be an RFP from ADA.
It will be, okay.
Looking for a development partner to put together a supply chain as limited as liquefaction capacity and as broad as FOB Fairbanks, depending on, because as you've heard in different presentations and heard different groups talk, everybody has a different way they think they can best accomplish this. Our goal is to leverage the ADA assets into the infrastructure such that it creates transparency into the pricing and buys down the cost in a long-term infrastructure basis rather than a power cost equalization type approach.
My last question, I'm sorry. In this conversation about Cook Inlet, what is your observation of the tax credits that are going to sunset here in the fall? That plays a pretty critical role.
Well, it does, and you heard Mr. Gallagher's observations earlier. The tax credits got us part of the way there, but didn't accomplish everything everyone had been hoping. And I think that is an accurate description of the situation. We have got traction with the discussion with South Central legislators that if indeed you want a tax credit approach to making sure there's both gas availability and price, wouldn't you want the interior sucking from that straw? so that now you have 8 more legislators who care about the value of cooking with gas and how it's going. And they're, you know, while there's risks of, well, we're not sure we want them there because it might be a finite resource, to have more statewide support for cooking with tax credits and cooking and more interest in the price and availability of cooking with gas, cooking with gas has got people's attention.
Yeah.
And so we'll see. Is the, you know, what's there, 28 days left, you know, for things to churn, but those discussions really have been helpful in terms of statewide interest in those credits.
Thank you.
So Bob, back to the demand side.
You bet.
Compared to the interior, is there any other areas, facilities, whether it's in the interior or other places, that is being looked at to drive that volume up? To me, the more volume you can have, it will help drive the price down. So, are there any from an LNG gas supply standpoint, interior areas, whether it's the bases or I would say mines, university, the Nana, or any places in the Cook Inlet area that would use LNG?
I'm only familiar with ones in the interior that we've looked at in terms of reaching with the trucking. The likelihood of them coming on in advance of there being a supply chain is pretty small. The likelihood of, is there going to be a market for it once we establish the base used in Fairbanks as the main draw is much higher. And the ones in particular that one could look at are the Clears, as they'll be providing their heat now with fuel oil. The places like Glen Allen, who's already expressed an interest, places along the road system, anybody with a cogeneration of heat and power or a strong demand of oil for electricity will be a potential customer and will look hard at this. Even the, you know, the HARP site in Gakona that has a ton of electric demand to run those radars, will look at that kind of stuff because they're all oil-based. So anybody who is oil-based and on the road system is a potential market. In Fairbanks, the military bases, I would say Fort Wainwright is more likely than Eielson, because Eielson has done upgrades of their coal-fired boilers. Fort Wainwright is doing the analysis now, and they have talked about, well, maybe we want to go off of the central plant because it's not just a plant replacement, but they're having trouble with their utilidors. And so is there a gas market for space heat in those big hangars, particularly on North Slope, that you would run a piping system and then heat the hangars with gas, and that's a 3B potential. So there's a huge potential swing, but it's again, you know, 2 to 3 years in the decision process, and having gas in the interior will help them make that choice toward gas. While it's speculative, whether it's the Fort Wainwright or the university power plant, it's hard to make a huge investment of hundreds of millions of dollars while they're waiting for us to complete and get our work done. And so no near term is what I would tell you. And those markets were explored extensively by MWH and their commercial partners, and so they've identified them all. They know about how much gas they would take if indeed there was gas, and they could make a rational business choice on it.
Do you anticipate another bite at the apple from the MWH folks on North Slope?
One of them's here. Whether it's MWH or some other group venture, I expect at least one out of the North Slope and as many as 3 based on the people that we talked to. And the North Slope, clearly, much more is known. Much of the risk has been eliminated as a result of the work for the last year. And I would not be surprised that out of the last 2 to 4 that we end up with, that one of them is a North Slope project, that we're evaluating North Slope against Cook Inlet, which is kind of the direction you gave us.
I have a few questions if I might. On slide 8, 9, and 14, Bob. On 8, we've had an open door policy, as said, you know, go to the last sentence. We had an article in the paper, our paper a week or so ago about propane. That prompted a call, and the person said, are you looking at propane? And I said, you know, I suspect we are. I don't know. And now today I found out. I wonder if it would be helpful for the board if as these ideas come in, if you could just give us, not a book, but just a paragraph. We're looking at propane. We're looking at flex steel, or just a chart that says, here are the active analyses.
Well,
can you do that?
I could more give you, here are the ideas that have come in, because how we plan to evaluate them is through the RFP process. And so we've heard from two different entities that are interested in propane. One that's looking at an air propane system that would essentially replace this portion of the supply chain, and you'd still put air propane into a piped gas system, which leads you into, well, when there is a pipeline, you have the infrastructure built out, which is one of the directions. Another approach has been, let's replace everybody's fuel tank and all the fuel trucks with propane tanks and propane trucks and do a substitute distributed model of a different kind of tank and essentially preclude a future that has to do with piping and propose a substitute approach. And we expect at least one of those will come in the RFP process. And so I'm hesitant to evaluate them first. With the exception of Flex Steel that I made a commitment to Senator Michicki, I would. But I can tell you the ideas that have come in the general nature of them.
And that's what I'm asking.
Okay.
Just to burst. So to answer the question, are you looking at, and I would look at that list and say, yes, that's come in. Are you looking at Glimpse from BC? I'd say, yeah, it's been submitted. And
that one has not. We have had a suggestion of taking advantage of the global warming and building a liquefaction plant on the nice North Slope and using icebreakers to bring it around.
Just a sentence. It's all.
A little deeper.
So slide 9. I don't understand slide 9, Bob, so if you might help me. What is the scale up the left side? Is 1,000 1T?
Yes.
Okay, so that says 10 years, no, let's see, that says remaining Cook Inlet reserves is 1.4T, but that's not right, is it?
That's of the known reserves that can be put to the pipe.
Put through any pipe?
Yes.
1.5T.
I thought it was like 9T or 19T at Cook Inlet.
That's to which reserves can you get to with drilling and investment and the Sterling Gallagher's discussion earlier of the credits have done a great job of identifying where reserves are. Significant investment is needed to bring them online. And so this does not characterize all the potential reserves in the Cook Inlet.
Is that column what we've come to know as P1 reserves?
No, you're talking to the wrong guy.
Okay. Jim's shaking his head. Somebody else is shaking his head.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's in the bank.
That's DNR's assessment. So you're talking to the wrong guy about Cook Inlet Market.
Okay.
And that's the reason that DNR and DCCED are taking the lead on this. But this is DNR's assessment of the Cook Inlet reserves that are known and available.
Okay. 1.5. Okay. And then that says Fairbanks Inn is, that's 0.5T?
This is 80 BCF, so 0.8.
What is it, 80 BCF?
Yes.
Okay. Now over to the next chart, full interior demand. The 120 is 120
BCF per year.
120 billion cubic feet per year.
Is the South Central current demand.
And if Agrium started up, they would take 30 BCF, or if they went full boat, they would take 60 BCF a
per year.
Per year.
Correct.
And the interior would take its 80.
No, it's eight. Per year. It would take its 9.5 at full build up.
9.5 Oh, that's where we were before.
Yeah.
Okay, then that's what the... Oh, I see. Okay. And that's House Bill 100. That's what the editorial in the paper in Fairbanks is about this morning. If you haven't seen
it. I have not seen it. No.
Okay. That comes full circle then. Now
This is if Agrium got started up and went two full trains, it would be 60 B per year of gas needed to generate run the fertilizer plant.
Okay. That really explains it. Okay. Thank you for that. And then Crystal brought up the tax credits. In a prior life, I remember a lot of work on those back when we were talking about rolling ground outs and we had in-ground storage and all that. So that was a few years ago. Is there a number somewhere that what those tax credits have amounted to? And that's GF tax credits, if I'm not mistaken.
They're GF tax credits. This year, the number is $300 million. And, you know, I've heard Representative Thompson say at least once, well, you give us 1 year's worth of tax credits and we'll have, you know, we'll have a line put, we'll have a system put together and pay for. And next year is looking to be $400 million. It will be one of the top five line items in the budget in terms of single line items for what gets paid.
That's $700 million in 2 years.
Yes.
What has it been since when they kicked in, what, 08 or 09? Any idea at all?
No, I don't.
I've got a report for you to read.
I'm kind of afraid. Sorry, I asked the question.
No, but the challenge this board has faced, trying to put together supply chain with paybacks and borrowed money, compared to the cash that's been put into Cook Inlet, it's a stark difference. And you guys have seen the challenges directly as a result of needing commercial payback in order to make something happen. And it's that sharing of the Cook Inlet discussion that's going on in the legislature right now that I think it's not just this, but it's the tax credits are being discussed as well as how do they relate to what's helping the interior.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, by all measures, it's been a success. I mean, it's turned a corner in a matter of 5 years, so it's not money that's been wasted. But that's a striking number. Well, yeah. Anyway, my last question. So, Bob, on 14, we talk about real cost estimates. I know this is heresy, but what would be the downside if we just stopped talking about the railroad and not had that distraction in front of us? And instead of us carrying the railroad's water, let us concentrate on the best and the biggest trucking component and make it as good as we can make it with the money we have and concentrate on that. And when the railroad gets their permits in hand, when they get their $120 million to complete the rail, when they know the costs of their ISO containers and how to handle all that, which today is a plan built on Jell-O, then they can come to us and say, you know, this is what you've been trucking for the last 5 years. We can do it for less. Well, why don't we just let that distraction go away and concentrate on what's real and what we can really have a solid foundation for costs?
Well, I guess I wouldn't accept the premise that we're wasting time and doing their work. We are working with them. As you've seen some of their presentations that estimate a dollar per MCF for transport. The assumptions underneath that are based on a full supply chain and a full train that in scenarios that are unlikely to happen. And so it's our job to let them know, here's our demand profile, here's the likely need, and let's work with you so that when you put these together, they're reflective of your operations. And to that extent, we're still asking them to do their modeling of what it would cost, but we need to provide them information and work with them in order to make sure their end result matches an answer that will work when they reach there. The other piece is the use of the train is dependent on where the liquefaction source is coming from. If it happens to be at Point McKenzie, there isn't an extension yet, and so you've got a lot of other things built in, and so a lot of it is, I call it supposedly. Suppose you have this, what do you suppose the price would be? Alternately, if it was an anchorage near the daily freight trains, they're already set up, and the ability to provide a ramped up service and the cost of entry is much smaller. And so working with them and understanding that adds value to us too. So I'm not ready to say come back when you have a full story, because part of the story is ours and part of it depends on the decisions that we recommend and the board makes on how the liquefaction comes in.
So what you're saying, Bob, is that the LNG plant may not be if there is a new one, may not be located on Point McKenzie. It could be within the same acreage.
Correct.
Or someplace else in the Matsu Borough.
Yes. Our serious work for cost modeling that we will bring to you will look at trucking, because we know the cost of that, we know it will work, and we know what it costs today to drive a truckload of LNG from Matsu to Fairbanks. And so when you see costs from us for transportation, it will match known costs modeled to the number of trucks and the demand chain. And so the second part of your question, that is what we are doing. We are using known costs for the existing supply chain to identify what would it take to get it to Fairbanks and what would it cost.
Are you looking, I know you're looking at the 13,000 gallon tanker, are you looking at the 18,000 gallon option? Yet?
The answer is no yet in terms of a pump. We have to get the 13,000 gallon tanker in the state, tested and approved before then we can put a 5,000 gallon pump on the back of it. But really that is testing of a trailer. The modeling is straight arithmetic. The cost per unit is 30% less if you have a 13,000 gallon trailer instead of a 10,000 gallon trailer.
When do you anticipate the trailer getting up there?
That's what I wish Nick was here. He is in contact with Western Cascade, and I don't know. It's in the Pacific Northwest, close.
Is it contracted to be built or bought?
There is one sitting in the Northwest.
Oh, good. Great.
And so how it gets here, who will test it and when, and all of that is, I should know the answer to that, and I apologize. I don't today. It's on my list of things to know.
That's good news.
Fred?
Mr. Chairman, I thought I heard discussion of this when you went to the demand side, but I think following recent news reports that President Campbell and Chancellor Rogers have indicated that the coal plant expansion is $50 million over budget for UAF, and at least President Campbell alluded to a potential change in fuel source through LNG and that. In that context, what's that represent in the sense of demand?
I'll answer that question and then I'll go back to the presumption. That UAF is about 1.1 to 1.2 B a year. With given it's a heat and power, it has a seasonal swing, not as strong as a residence, but it's a strong seasonal swing to the winter. The discussion on likelihood of going to gas probably was overreported. It was looked at by UAF. I don't know if you're aware, I had worked that project for UAF in my prior life, so I'm familiar with it. And the main design choice that was made was to go from two boilers of about 140,000 pounds of steam per hour to a single 280,000 pound, and that shrinks the footprint of the building, it shrinks the cost of the boiler, and that single change brought it back within budget. And they're still optimizing that, but it's likely that solid fuel plant is back within budget as a result of the design changes through their process. And so the likelihood that they would go to gas, it does not match what we heard. Yeah.
Well, Mr. Chairman, thank you for that. That makes sense to me. I just, state resources are being deployed in both projects, so it makes
yes, sir. And it was looked at again by UAF. They reran the analyses they did in 2010, current with both the numbers they have available now and the financing pieces that actually came out of the legislature to relook at that. And the solid fuel project under $240 million still beats a gas plant at $140 million of capital cost because of the differential in the cost of gas and coal. Coal is
$100 million. Coal is every $100 million help right now.
Yeah, but coal is $5 per MMBTU compared to 12 or so. So your operating costs double through the choice, and it's close, but it's still. Still comes out solid fuel.
Mr. Chairman, I have a follow-up. I'd like to see that analysis.
You bet.
That's just an interesting question. I understand perfectly what you just said, but the dynamics of this situation keep shifting, so it's just very screwy, that's
you
all.
Bet.
I guess I'd be curious to what the additional 1.2 or 1.5B would do to the overall market price in the interior with that additional capacity. You know, demand.
Well, it's still seasonal, so
yeah. How does that play in? And the other thing is on the storage side. Would university need a separate storage? If they do, would that help play into a big enough storage for the rest of the community to help offset some costs? Those are all just questions that I would think of. Crystal,
can I have a question? This will be my last one. I'm still back with the gas supply agreement. So our mission is the lowest cost possible, and yet our term sheet is going to be with a secure supplier, one supplier. So what would be the benefit of having one supplier when we want the market to deliver some benefits of the economics to us?
Well, I guess I would tell you that it's not guaranteed that we would end up with just one. You might end up with multiple suppliers.
Okay.
So that you, depending on the size of them and how many assets they have, you wouldn't want to be dependent on one. Well,
so it could be plural.
It could be plural,
clarification.
Yes, it could be. Okay. We are a small market, so it wouldn't be, you know,
right,
everybody. Right. But it is not set on only being one. So.
Perfect. Thank you.
Good catch.
Jerry, you still there? Do you have any questions?
I got no questions.
All right. So do you want to...
So with that, let me transition to...
So I think a couple of the board members here probably need a little break. Okay. Included, so
then we'll
so
transition
can
to...
Can we take a quick 10-minute break here for personal reasons?